Councillor McCall has described to me, if something is on the agenda of the Community Council as business as usual, and your normal and your role as a councillor, you attend all the Community Council meetings, then if it's there and you don't make specific comment on it, then I don't see that being seen as being unfair to either to either applicants or objectors. If you have been approached by your constituents in a surgery, again, that's business as usual. And in particular, I notice Councillor McCall has gone out of way to balance what happened, that she's having heard some objectors, she's then also spoken to the applicants. And provided that you haven't expressed an opinion either way, you've shown that you've been acting in a balanced and fair way, you're not being unfair to either side, and you've not prejudged the issue. So it is the extra step of, if you've only spoken to one side, what could you have done to balance that up? And if you've taken sufficient action to do so, then I do not think you could be seen to be acting unfairly to either side.
My plan was to speak. You know, I wasn't planning on withdrawing from that. My plan, given that I did specifically, because I'd been approached by two objectors, then speak to the applicant, I am planning on speaking to it.
Well, again, sorry, convener, again, I was only approached last night at my surgery, so I have had no opportunity to speak to the applicant. So, again, I think I will withdraw from that to keep myself from being dragged in front of the standards.
Thanks, Councillor Wallace. Again, it's the individual's choice of what they do, and I appreciate what your actions are. Is there any further on? Can I just say, Councillor McCall, you've mentioned 5.5 now, which is it's going to be a pre-planning consultation, which is reported to this committee today. So any member has an opportunity to make some points at that juncture. Points to help the planning officer when they're determining the application. So we're quite entitled to do that under the strict guidance of the Act. So therefore, again, whether you've attended the meeting at is it Howgate?
Pennycook Town Hall. Oh, well, oh. No, this was
The pre-planning consultation.
Howgate Community Council. Right. And the planners had an event at Pennycook Town Hall.
That's right.
I haven't attended any of the meetings that the Wellington Action Group have had, in case that gave the impression of bias.
Again, Councillor McCall, that's a normal business of an elected member. You get advised about these particular pre-planning meetings that are taking place in the community, and an elected member is quite entitled to attend. Again, as long as no opinion is given, then you are actually breaking no code. Is that right, Mr. Turbeth?
Right. I just felt, Chair, after the last meeting, it was all very fresh in my mind, so I felt it was pertinent.
I think we're all feeling a little bit tetchy about all that's happened in this last little while, and still are coming to terms with others' interpretations of what we should be doing, as opposed to our interpretation, which we have been doing. Right. Anyway, on declarations of interest, Councillor Smale.
Yes, I'd refer to page 29, where we talk about the land at the rear of 180 Main Street, Path Head. I should declare that I paid a visit to this site on Sunday evening, unaccompanied by a planning officer. A bit difficult to get hold of a planning officer on Sunday night, simply to ascertain that the demolition has actually taken place, which it has. Whether that disallows me from any other future matter remains to be determined.
Again, Councillor Smale, it's within your ward. You're carrying out a function as an elected member. And again, I don't see this stepping in any way into the code. But I'll ask Mr. Turpin if he has a different opinion.
No, Chair, just to reiterate that it is only if someone could perceive your actions as being unfair to one side or the other. And I appreciate how it does get very difficult when you'll be comfortable in your own mind that you're acting reasonably and in an unbiased way, but I suppose it's what would your actions trigger thoughts in other people, and that's, I suppose it's harder to tell. And I think if in doubt, obviously the safer course is to withdraw. But if you're just going to on a fact-finding issue, just to check if something has been demolished or not, then I can't see how that would be perceived as being unfair.
Anybody else while we're still going round item three? Can I just remind everybody that if you do come upon an item on the agenda that you feel you've got to declare, please declare it at that point and we can take it and get it recorded. So it's on the record as having made that particular contribution. Okay, that then takes us on to the minutes of the 14th of May for your approval. Are these acceptable? Okay. Anybody got anything that? No. Oh, sorry, no. Councillor. You're on a roll
no,
today, Councillor McCall.
No, I was just going to say for those that attended the whole meeting, you're kind of there's that most of us can't approve the minutes.
In actual fact, some of the minutes can't be approved today because actually the people that are in attendance wouldn't make up a quorum. So, yeah, it's the meeting. The meeting is noted and will have to be. Will have to be reported back. That then takes us on to item 5.1, which is on page 15 to 20, which is strategic development plan. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This report informs the committee of the Minister's decision to reject the second strategic development plan, commonly referred to as SDP2. The strategic development plan for Edinburgh and the southeast of Scotland covers 6 council areas, including the city of Edinburgh, East Lothian, Mid Lothian, West Lothian, Scottish Borders, and the southern half of Fife. CESPLAN is the strategic planning authority and works in partnership with the 6 members to prepare a strategic vision for the region. The first strategic development plan was adopted in June 2013, with supplementary guidance setting housing targets for the member authorities being adopted in November 2014. The SDP2 proposed plan was submitted to the Scottish Government for examination in June 2017. The report of examination was published in July 2018, and following consideration of the report, the Minister issued his decision letter on the 16th of May 2019, rejecting the plan for the reasons set out in paragraph 3.2 of the report. The decision to reject the strategic development plan is unprecedented, and it is now for CESPLAN to determine what action, if any, it intends to take in light of the Minister's decision. The committee at this stage is recommended to note the Scottish Minister's decision and to receive a further update once CESPLAN Joint Committee has considered its options and determined a course of action.
Just for noting today, and obviously there's going to be further discussion along the line. Councillor Mulligan.
Thanks, Chairman. Chairman, can I just ask the planning manager if he can set out the risks to us now with this being rejected? When this plan went through a public inquiry with an independent reporter and was accepted and recommended for approval, there are numerous councils all involved in this that all have senior planning officers and legal officers that tell us that this was all done right. It's lay in the minister's desk for over a year and now been rejected. What are now the risks to this council? And I'm going to assume, because part of the local plan's no longer been approved, that we'll have some form of protection, but we're constantly seeing us being overruled here by the ministers time after time. What are now the risks to the council's assess plan with this being rejected? Because I have to assume now that every landowner that was rejected will now come back in to try and have their land established as part of the house and land supply.
Chair, yeah, this is a, as I said, an unprecedented situation. But just to give it some context, members will be aware that the order of things in terms of development planning is that you adopt a structure plan. We currently have SDP1, which is adopted in 2013. On the back of that, the 6 authorities will prepare their own local plan, and we obviously had ours adopted in 2017. Now, the sequence of events should have been that the second strategic development plan would have, in theory, been adopted, and then the councils then would have prepared their next local plans on the back of that structure plan. So we've effectively broken that chain, in effect. So the first risk is, in terms of each of the 6 member authorities, it's got to make judgments about what it does in terms of preparing its own next local plan. It can make another local plan based on SDP 1, so it can go back to that route, or it can wait and see what happens next, and I'll come back to that point in a minute. The second risk is about housing, in effect, and one of the primary functions of the strategic plan is that it identifies the volume of housing that each of those six authorities needs to deliver. It sets those housing targets, in effect, and then the local plans set those individual sites. Now, Midlothian, like all the other authorities except Edinburgh, negotiated a position in the second plan that it did not take any additional new housing. So it was almost looking to line up quite a neutral local development plan next, where it had no pressure to allocate sites. And there is a risk for authorities now that don't have what's called a five-year housing land supply, that you are now vulnerable to potentially appeals if you do not have that housing land supply. In Midlothian's case, we do have that. We have enough housing to keep building for at least 5.9 years is the current calculation. That time period changes as sites come forward. So we're one of the authorities which, at the moment, in the short term, we have that degree of protection from our own sites. Other councils in that CESS plan area don't have that and maybe are more vulnerable to appeal decisions than us. If you jump forward, the next challenge for us, and it actually starts today insofar as that the planning bill is back in front of the Parliament for 3 days, and the planning bill is being considered, and it's being proposed to actually remove strategic planning. So we're in a position where we don't have a new strategic plan adopted. However, we are faced with a real prospect that the government are going to effectively remove that requirement anyway. If that wasn't the case, one of the options would have been, okay, step back and redo bits of it and resubmit it, but that may not actually be a requirement for us now if the government decide to remove strategic planning. They're looking to potentially replace it with a regional-based system, but the details of that have not come forward yet. So there's a bit of uncertainty about the next steps, and that's why I'm a bit vague about what we do now. In terms of the CESS plan joint committee, and for those members not familiar with that, it comprises two elected members from each of those six authorities. It's got to make judgments, and the first one it potentially may be making on Monday, the following Monday, is whether to legally challenge that decision. So that still is an option for the joint committee. So that's an option for the joint committee to consider. So at the moment, Chair, to be direct, the uncertainty is about how we prepare our next local plan, and there's some uncertainty across the wider CESS plan area about housing appeal decisions, and we can only advise members as those decisions come forward in the coming months. But like I say, at the moment, based on our local plan, we do actually have our 5 years plus housing land supply, so we've got a degree of protection from that at the moment, Chair, but I'll just update the committee as we move forward.
Right, for you, Councillor Mulligan. We'll just note it at the moment and we'll be coming back to the committee. Councillor Smale.
Yes, just to clarify from the point of view of the public, it might be thought that the failure of this plan to be agreed by the Scottish Government meant that all bets were off on the level of house building in Midlothian. And that, I understand, is not the case, because the numbers, the 25% growth in houses that we're experiencing, was agreed as a result of CESS Plan 1 and incorporated in by the previous administration in November 2014. So the targets for houses, our obligation to build on the zone sites, position of the reporters, will not change in terms of house building in Midlothian.
Yeah, I recognise the point, Chair. Yeah, it's as I was trying to explain it with the local plan, you're right, the numbers have been set previously. You're always a few years behind in terms of what's getting built now is allocated a few years back, and that was based on housing numbers determined a sort of previous date again. So you're always behind to a point. So at the moment, maybe not a problem now, but it's what happens in the future. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. Members will be aware this arises out of a motion which went up to the last council meeting, asking officers to look at the potential for a developer contributions committee. The recommendation in the report, as you'll see, is for your views, but also for council's decision, and that is to refer the matter to a short life working group of elected members looking at the issue of standing orders.
Okay, it will come up at the full council meeting anyway as a report back on a motion that was carried through. But has anybody got any observations as at the moment? Nope. Okay. Right, thanks for that. Takes us on to 5.3, which is major development applications, the normal agenda where anything that's on the horizon is circulated to us, so that if any members have any questions, they're quite entitled to ask the planning officer. Is there anybody got anything at this moment? Nope. Okay, then that takes us on to 5.4, which is the appeals and local review body decisions. Again, has anybody got anything there that they want to say? Or we just note these decisions? Oh, Councillor Milligan.
Russell, just to reiterate that my sheer disappointment and frustration that yet again, across this committee, we rejected the application for further hot food takeaways in the Tesco area, and yet again we've been we see reporters coming in and overruling the elected members. I just find it really, really frustrating that time after time in here, we're rejecting items for very good reasons, and time after time we're just simply being overruled.
I'm sure that'll be noted. Any more? No. Okay, that then takes us on to 5.5, which is the pre-planning consultation regarding the land at the former Wellington School. Peter, just want to introduce it? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report regarding a pre-application consultation for residential development at land at the former Wellington School, Pennycook. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposals at this very early stage of the planning process, in line with the guidance reported to committee in its meeting in June 2017. The applicants have engaged in a public consultation exercise, which included holding a public drop-in session in May 2019. The report outlines a provisional planning consideration with regard to development plan and material considerations. The Midlothian Local Development Plan identifies the site as an additional housing development opportunity for between 50 and 60 units, and therefore there is a presumption in favour of appropriate residential development. The Midlothian Local Development Plan identifies a number of development requirements which any future application will have to address. These are referenced in paragraphs 3.5 to 3.8 of the report. However, it is worth noting that this consideration is based on indicative information that's available at present. A detailed assessment of any proposal will be made if a planning application is forthcoming. The applicant could submit a planning application once the public consultation exercise has been concluded. It is recommended that committee notes the provisional planning position set out in the report, that any comments made by members will form part of the minute of the committee meeting, and that the expression of a provisional view does not fetter the committee in its consideration of any subsequent formal planning application.
Has anybody got anything that they would want to say to help with the planners when they come to a recommendation, which will obviously come back to the committee? Has anybody got anything to say just now? No? Oh, you're getting off lightly today, Peter. Okay, right, that then takes us on to 5.7, which is the application for planning permission at Harden Greenhouse, Dalkeith. Peter, you're on again.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for planning permission in principle for a mixed-use development incorporating employment uses and residential development on land to the north of Harden Greenhouse, Dalkeith. Although the application is in principle, the applicant has submitted an indicative master plan which indicates 3,000 square metres of commercial floor space, 140 car parking spaces, 20 residential units, access arrangements, and the location of a suds basin. Approximately two-thirds of the site is within the built-up area of Dalcleith and comprises an economic land allocation as an extension to Harden Green Industrial Estate. I was saying approximately two-thirds of the site is within the built-up area of Dalkeith and comprises an economic land allocation as an extension to Harden Green Industrial Estate. The proposed economic uses in this part of the site accord with the development plan or can be seen as ancillary to the business uses and the wider industrial estate and are therefore acceptable in principle. The proposed residential development in this part of the site is contrary to the development plan and is unacceptable in principle. Approximately one-third of the site is within the green belt. In this area, the applicant is proposing residential development and landscaping and suds provision. The proposed residential development is, again, contrary to the development plan and unacceptable in principle. In addition to the fundamental policy objection to the proposed residential development and encroachment into the green belt, the applicant has not demonstrated that the site can be drained of surface water. There has been 10 representations objecting to the application and 12 consultation responses, the details of which are set out in sections 5 and 6 of the report. The recommendation is to refuse planning permission.
Thank you very much indeed. Open up to members of the committee. Do we go with their recommendations? Councillor Smale?
I seem to say in principle any development that through the planning system attempts to reduce this, the area of the green belt will not have my support.
Right, thank you, Councillor Smale. Councillor Cassidy?
I just ask, Chair, if we do reject this one, what are the chances that the reporter's going to come back and overturn this? Because in the report, I know it says that the green belt is not what you'd call top-class green belt. It's kind of industrial that's grown over, if you like, from the old railway.
There's two planning concerns. One is the encroachment into the greenbelt, but you're right, we've put in the report that there's it's not prime greenbelt, and that's because it historically was used as part of the works to put the railway in, so it's disturbed and it's not ideal in terms of what you would stereotypically imagine the greenbelt looks like. But whether that stays in or comes out of the green belt as a decision which you make through the local plan process, and there's a formal process to go through. The other fundamental concern, obviously, is that it's proposing residential development, and we've got a situation where that's not allocated for residential development, either in the economic part or the green belt, so there's a fundamental objection to it. In terms of prejudging any potential appeal decision, obviously, I've got no crystal ball. However, Chair, they usually play quite a straight bat in terms of the policy position. The policy position is quite clear here in that it is not allocated for residential development. And touching on an earlier conversation, we do have our five-year housing land supply, i.e. there's enough land to keep building houses for the next 5 years. So there's no shortfall that you have to take housing at any cost. So, Chair, I would suggest that, okay, although I can't prejudge in a reporter, I think we've got a very strong case to win this if it goes to appeal, Chair.
Point is, there's no guarantee, but we've got a pretty strong case of why the reporter shouldn't uphold any appeal that may come in front of them. And the way to do it is to do it through a local plan, which we'll be starting sometime soon, he says. Anyway, is there any further questions anybody has? Agree the recommendations by the committee, the officer, yes, to refuse the application. Right, thank you very much. That then takes us on to a Section 42 application under 5.8, which is it to extend the time period for completion of the infilling for a further 36 months at Pentland Burn, Pentland Road, Dam Head. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is a Section 42 application to amend a planning condition 9, imposed on a grant of planning permission approved in September 2014 for engineering works comprising the infilling of land adjacent to the Edinburgh City bypass off Pentland Road, Dam Head. Section 42 application in itself is a planning application, a particular kind of planning application for development which does not comply or amends a planning condition which has been previously imposed on a grant of planning permission. Condition 9 relates to the time periods in which the infilling and the restoration of the site thereafter is undertaken. The application seeks to extend the infilling period from a deadline of September 2019 to September 2022. The three-year extension is required because of the limited availability of material. The works comprise raising the level of land by up to 2 metres over the 15-hectare site using inert material. Approximately 323,000 tonnes of material will be imported between 2014 when the operations began and the proposed extended completion date of September 2022. The infilling will be sculpted to tie the works into the land form and to manage drainage. The applicant has advised that these works will improve the quality of the land for agriculture. The engineering works will also create a small wetland area on the site. The final restoration will take place within the 12 months following the cessation of the infilling works. The site is accessed off Pentland Road, Dam Head. Vehicles enter from the direction of the A702 and depart in the direction of the A701. The development site is within the countryside and greenbelt, where there is a presumption against development unless it is in support with identified rural activity. The overall plan of improving the quality of the land for agriculture is an acceptable development in this location. The consultation responses are set out in Section 5 of the report. There have been no representations received, and the recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions.
Thanks very much indeed. Questions, comments? Well, we agree with the recommendation to extend it for another 36 months. Agreed. Thank you very much. That then takes us on to application for planning permission for the erection of dwelling house, cafe, amenity building, and the siting of 5 yurts. Formation of a bond and associated works on land at Netherton East of the A701 Pennycook. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the erection of a dwelling stroke cafe, the siting of 5 yurts and the erection of associated amenity building, the formation of a pond and associated works on land at Netherton East of the A701 Pennycook. The dwelling stroke cafe building is a mix of two-storey and single-storey. It is a timber kit house and includes a one-bedroom dwelling and cafe. The amenity building is a single-storey structure and is also a timber kit building, which provides amenities and services for visitors staying on the site. The yurts are timber and canvas tent-like structures, which provide tourist accommodation. The proposal also includes the formation of a pond for wild swimming. In addition to the proposed works, the applicant has already planted 16,500 trees to enhance the local biodiversity. The proposed rural business is designed to provide an income to maintain the newly planted woodland. The site is located in the countryside on land allocated for low-density rural housing in support of rural businesses and landscape and biodiversity enhancement. The proposal meets the planning policy requirements set out in the development plan and is of a scale and form that sits comfortably in the countryside location. There have been 9 representations from 6 different householders objecting to the application and 4 consultation responses, the details of which are set out in sections 5 and 6 of the report. The recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions.
Thank you very much indeed, Peter. Open up for questions, comments. Anything, Councillor McCall?
Thank you, Chair. I called this in because I thought it was worthwhile having a further discussion about it. There was some interesting comments about it, and I don't think the applicant appreciated he could have asked some of the neighbours for positive comments into the committee as well. I'm happy to propose this paper. I think it's a good application, and I think it's something that's perhaps needed in the area. The applicant's very keen for it to be sustainable. So, for example, he was talking about giving discounts to people who were using public transport to get there, served by the 62, the X62, and possibly the 101. I'm not 100% certain on that bus. So I did listen to the concerns that the objectors had about people who were going to be there. I know there's been huge issues in other parts of the Scottish borders with party houses and stag do's and hen do's that go on for weeks, but that is not the clientele that we're looking at here. I think the wild swimming is really quite an exciting something different as well, I think. And at the moment there is nothing in that area at all since the Ledburn closed down. You either go up to Pennycook or you go, I think it's 5 miles down the road to Whitmuir. So I do think that this would be something positive for the area and bring some jobs as well. There was one thing that one of the objectors had said that they had concerns. As you come up to the area, you come up a path and then it sort of splits into a Y, and it's not completely clear, you know, which is which. And I think the people that are directly beside it at Netherton House, I think they have concerns about being disturbed. So I wonder what could be done there. I mean, are we talking about signage here to make life a bit more easy? Because I don't know if I may have missed it, Peter, if there's anything about, you know, proper signage so you can see quite clearly that it's the lane to the right that takes you up to the development, if something could be done there. The objectors did propose perhaps people parking by the cafe area and walking up, and I don't know if that's maybe a bit too much. I'd be interested to know what you would think about that, Peter.
Yeah, Chair, I think I understand. It's once you're actually into the site, like you say, there's a sort of fork in the road, and Mr. A simple sign just to direct one way or the other is easily done. We can easily speak to the applicants about that, Chair. But the other thing I was just going to mention is it's interesting. I think in paragraph 8.15, we reference some of the distances that some of the activities are away from the nearest property, i.e. Netherton House. So, you know, if you think the cafe house is 60 metres away from Netherton House, the swimming pool and the wild swimming and those facilities are 140 metres away. You know, the parking for the glamping is 50 metres away. So it's not in close immediate proximity of the dwelling, Chair. That's quite a good separation distance. But you're right, we can simply speak to the applicant about just a sign just to make sure that confusion about where you turn left or right is avoided, Chair.
Can I just come back on that? What one of the objectors had said was, would it be possible for them to park at the cafe shop? I mean, do you think that would be appropriate, or do you just think that would be just a bit much as a
Yeah, I mean, the car park for the yurts is obviously a different one to the cafe house. It's closer to the facilities, so it's obviously less distance to travel with all the stuff that you take glamping. The other thing is just to say, Chair, is that they're proposing 5 yurts. This isn't a high level of usage, so you're looking at a relatively small number of vehicles. So I personally think, Chair, and I would recommend to you that what they're proposing is okay. It's a relatively small car park, low level of usage. It's got a degree of separation from Netherton House. As proposed, I would say it's okay, that's acceptable, and it's fine. I think to make them park where the cafe is, which is on the other side of the site, and then walk, it may actually be more disturbing if you're walking past the house than actually driving past the house. So it may be best just to leave it as proposed, Chair.
thanks for that, Peter. I'm happy to move the paper.
Is there anybody? Oh, Councillor Smell.
Yeah, I don't know how other councillors feel about this. This, I believe, is an area of outstanding landscape value. I find it impossible to say yea or nay to this because we have not had a site visit. We were supposed to have site visits yesterday and they were cancelled for some reason. But I find it very difficult where the visual aspect of the objectors is as a critical part of their case that we have not had a chance to see the site, nor can I go to it unaccompanied.
Just on the issue of site visits, if elected members see anything on the upcoming agenda, when the upcoming agendas are published, then they have the right to actually ask for a site visit. That's why it's in there. And what we've done in anticipation it may happen is to put it in the diaries, not for a site visit, but if there was to be a request, then that would be the date and the time prior to that. So it's up to all 18 elected members, which includes myself, to actually request a visit if they feel it would be appropriate to have one. There hasn't been in the last two planning committee meetings any request, and that's why you've seen this thing coming up being cancelled. The administration can't cancel it until the last day possible, which is the Friday. So therefore, that's why we're getting it so late, which is an irritation in itself, because you don't know until then if there's going to be a site visit or not. But that's the reason and rationale behind it, Councillor Smell.
Okay, so it's not necessarily the case that if a councillor calls in an application that there will be a site visit?
No. There wasn't a request for a site visit. It was only a call in to be determined by the committee, which we came up against at some other meeting, if you recall. Councillor McCall.
Yeah, obviously I've had a site meeting, Councillor Smell, and I was quite happy with what I saw. It's very difficult to look on a map. I find it difficult to do that, and for me a site visit is important, and it worked out that I was getting both sides of view in that particular case, and I was quite happy with what I saw and the trees that have been planted, which will eventually shade off the yurts from the main road, but also where it is quite set back, so it's very unobtrusive. I'm up and down that road three times a week at the moment, and from where you are at the moment there are trees in front of it anyway. I don't think that you would see very much from the main road at all. Obviously the cafe building would be, but I understand from the materials that they're planning on using that would be in keeping with the area.
That would help, Councillor Smell.
Well, I think we're in the odd position that we have an expectation when it's in the diary and somebody's called something in that there will be a site visit if it is a matter that is highly visual, but we can't rely on that assumption. And so I don't know what communications we can have to ascertain whether there is a general desire amongst the planning group to actually see something on the ground.
Any elected member that feels that a site visit would help them make a decision is quite entitled, when the agenda comes out, to pick up the phone or email the planning officer, and they will arrange for that site visit arrange for the transport to be ready, and everybody else would get a notice that site visit was going ahead and what we were going to have a look at. So there's nothing under the table on this one. It's just process, and in actual fact we agreed to put them in the diaries, because the problem is if somebody asks for that, it might not meet that agenda meeting like for today. If somebody had called it in, then it wouldn't have actually, it wouldn't have anything in the diary. You then have to have 7 days at least to arrange to have the visit. So that's why we agreed that we put them in anyway, which is a safeguard. Am I correct, Mike? You
Chair, if it helps, I'll recirculate the guidance we offered to members on requesting site visits. For sake of clarity, today, if an item is called in, it is up to the member that makes the call in to indicate whether or not they feel a site visit is required. There's no automatic assumption that a site visit will take place, Councillor Smell. So, you know, from that point of view, I don't know if that helps you, but we'll certainly put around the guidance again. in terms of, you know, how to request a site visit. And it is open to any member to request a site visit. It doesn't necessarily have to be in your ward. It can be in any business that comes before the committee.
Thank you.
Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to second this proposal because I know the area quite well. I know I've read through this report and I agree with the planners and everything that the positivity in this report, and I think it's going to be an enhancement to the area. As Councillor McCall says, it's going to bring something to the place.
Thanks very much, Councillor Cassidy. Am I hearing anybody wanting to move an alternative to the proposition that's now been moved and seconded? Nope. Okay, the application is approved. And that brings us to the end of the meeting. Can I thank you for your attendance and attention?